702. WhatsApp Karima on 072 702 1702.
It's just gone 20 minutes after 9 o'clock. This is the Karima Rand Show. You are listening to 702. Now, the African National Congress's stalwart and former anti-apartheid activist, as well as former Member of Parliament, Professor Ben Turok, today wrote an extremely critical article in the Business Day on the state of the governing African National Congress and said that it was time to openly reflect on what has gone wrong with the ruling party and how it can be fixed. And of course, he says that the politicians and senior public servants emulated the conduct of a new class of luxury-loving individuals. He calls them conspicuous, consumptuous business types who set new standards of profligacy. And of course, he continues to say that it's time to think aloud, to reflect publicly on who has gone on what has gone wrong in the ANC, the government and parliament, without equivocation. The condition of our country, he says, is too serious for excuses and half-truths. He now joins me on the line. Professor Turok, good evening. Thank you so very much for joining us on the line.
Good evening.
Now, the article that you have written pulls no punches. In fact, it reminds me of what former Justice Yacoub said, Zak Yacoub said on the day that Pravin Gordhan was charged. He said that many of the people in the African National Congress today simply cannot call themselves members of the ANC because they do not respect the oath that they take as a member of the African National Congress, that they are a perversion of what the party historically and traditionally stood for. And a lot of your article reminds me of that, because you talk about the fact that there is a crisis in our economy as well as a moral crisis in public life. And of course, unfortunately, the latter, you say, has captured the attention of everybody when we should actually be fixing on the economy.
Yes, I would like to make two points. The first one is that those of us who were spent many years in the struggle can't help remembering the values that we had in the struggle years. You know, I was active in the 50s and 60s and so on. And the values of the ANC, you know, before the emergency and even in exile, the values then were quite different to what the values are now. So that's the first point.
Mm.
The second point, I think, is that we made a huge mistake. Before 1994, we all said that South Africa was a system of super exploitation.
Mm.
Namely, there was a white minority which was sitting on the backs of the black majority, and that the relationships were not just normal capitalist relations in a capitalist system, but they were super exploitation.
Yes.
That is that the differences between white and black were huge.
Mm.
Now, one would have thought that a liberation movement would say, since that was the system then,
yes,
let us now, in 1994, change that.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, we slipped into the same system, so that even today, you have the same inequalities today that we had before 1994. You know, and that means that a fundamental error was made by the ANC in not saying we are going to behave ourselves in a way which is different to a colonial system.
Professor Turok, I mean, I think you're making an extremely important point. My argument has always been, when people talk about deracializing the economy and whether people are policing black wealth, my argument has always been, why do we seek moral equivalence with a system that was described as a crime against humanity? And you correctly point out the fact that South African capitalism was more irrational than it is in other places. because it, of course, rested on this bed of colonial and racial exploitation. So even if, for example, you wanted to restructure the mining industry, because black labor was treated as chattel, if you wanted to change the pay structure, it literally affected the bottom line of businesses because that was the model on which it was structured. Why do you think the African National Congress made the fundamental mistake? Was it the desire to just ape what had gone before? Was it the fact that we had the collapse of the Soviet Union and this kind of almost unanchoring of the ANC in an ideological sense? I mean, it was never a socialist organization, but was also never an openly pro-capitalist organization. In fact, it defined itself as a disciplined force of the left in favor of the poor and the working class. What is at the root of that incorrect decision, which I happen to agree with, that was taken? What drove it, do you think?
Well, I think there are two elements. The first is, you're quite right, the collapse of the Soviet Union left the ANC without an ally, a reliable ally. And since the ANC and the Communist Party depended a great deal on Moscow, when that collapsed, that was a major blow. And also Africa. Africa said to the ANC, it's time to settle. African governments and African leaders actually advised the Harare Declaration and so on. African leaders actually advised that negotiations should begin. So there was pressure, and that led to the kind of negotiations that happened. But also, there was the government of national unity. And I know that Mandela and others were terribly scared of a white rebellion, of a backlash. And it wasn't far away. So there were very real issues for compromises and for moving relatively cautiously. But what was missing, and the point I'm trying to make, is this. Even now, when we have a social democracy, almost of a Western kind, you know, we have votes, we have elections, we have parliaments and so on. We have a social democracy. Why is it that in Europe, the working class was able to win many gains after the Second World War? And in South Africa, the working class, despite social democracy, is unable to make the same gains. And there's an answer to that. And the answer is because the colonial heritage is still very strong.
And why do you think that the African National Congress is, in fact, aping post-colony kinds of governments, given the fact that it's didn't define its national liberation movement in such narrow terms? It understood the class content of that national liberation. And if that was understood, why was it so easy to just give up on developing more equitable policy solutions that would deal with fundamental issues? For me, for example, one of the greatest failures of the Mandela era was the refusal to introduce compulsory free quality education. And also, he did very little about AIDS, for example. Why would the African National Congress not choose education as a route, because it was at the heart of holding back black progress after dispossessing people off their land?
I think one could argue that in the first 10 years, the balance of forces in the country was not very favorable for the ANC to take very radical steps. I think one could argue that.
Even on education?
Well, you know, the question of resources and so on, because the economy was tight and the resources were not so many. But I agree with you, much more should have been done. But the point is, in the second 10 years, in the Zuma period, everything began to go wrong. And I think at the moment, we're living in the memory and the shadow of the Zuma years. And forgetting some of the more positive things that happened in the first 10 years under Mandela and Mbeki. There were some positive elements, although they didn't go far enough and they didn't make the correct decisions in some areas. But it's the legacy of the Zuma years which are really a burden upon us now.
Yes.
And what I can't understand is why there are still people who are willing to support Zuma, despite all the evidence that has come out of the Zondo Commission and the Nugent Commission. Why is it that there are still people who are willing to talk favorably about Zuma? Why are there still people who want to respect him? Well, I don't respect him at all.
But Professor Turok, the question needs to be asked to the African National Congress. My view is that there are effectively two political projects in the party. The one is to exercise a rules-based constitutional democracy, and the other sees that as an impediment and wants to accelerate that kind of consumption, that kind of crass materialism that you're talking about, but not for all the people, for selected individuals. And we've seen the breaking down of institutions that stood in the way and that impeded that process. But this is still in the same organization, because people believe it's better to, for lack of a better word, piss inside the tent than outside of the tent. I mean, we've had COPE that was formed, we've had the EFF that has been formed, but the message coming out of even a Cyril Ramaphosa-led African National Congress is one of unity. But I mean, it's a false unity, because they're two opposing projects. How can they coexist in one organization?
Well, the problem arises that the ANC failed to develop a proper economic policy, an economic policy that will take the country forward. And when you don't have a proper economic policy, which is both realistic and dynamic, then all sorts of other nonsense come up. I mean, you get the EFF and all their idiocies, and you get all sorts of crazy ideas. And now you've got the land issue, the expropriation issue. You know, we the country is not clear, and the ANC is not clear on an economic program. Mm. And although Ramaphosa has got this new dawn and so on, he has not spelled out adequately the way forward that everybody can latch onto. Mm. We need a minimum program which is acceptable to everybody, including business. Mm. Business must buy in. And the unions. There is no sign of an agreed minimum program which would be acceptable to the whole movement, the whole country. There's no sign of it.
Professor Turok, I happen to agree with you on that. And yet, President Ramaphosa's strategy is what he calls social compacting. But I mean, we confuse social compacting with the very real process that needs to happen, where people have to actually trade things off and agree to trade them off and agree to sell those trades off to all the constituents and constituencies. Exactly. And that is why the agreements that we make simply doesn't hold. I mean, people spend years looking at things like a national minimum wage, and yet when the law comes, there are fundamental differences on what people understood they were busy crafting and drafting and what eventually becomes law.
You know, going back into history, there was a time when in Italy there was talk about a historical compromise.
Yeah.
A historical compromise is when the forces which oppose each other recognize that neither side is strong enough
to
win.
Yes.
And so you agree on an accord and on a minimum program which both sides can accept. Mm. Why is it that we can't come to such a deal? I don't think it's impossible. I think business is in the mood for compromise. I think they would be willing to make concessions. I think that they would be willing to invest. If, on the other side, labor itself was willing to engage in this, and if the ANC was able to come forward with an acceptable program, I don't understand why we can't do that. You see, the summits that we've just had ought to have been a venue where an accord had a principled basis.
Yes.
Instead, it was a roadshow.
Mm.
And people came along and made promises about the investments and so on. What we need is a real, serious, negotiated settlement. We do need a new CODESA.
Now, if
Odessa.
I happen to agree with you on that, but if you look at, for example, historically the ANC was able to work within an alliance that represented most organized workers, most of the unemployed. The labor federations today are completely fragmented. They are at each other's throats in most instances, instead of actually developing a minimum program to advance the cause of the working class. And of course, that happened under President Jacob Zuma's tenure. On the other hand, you have development finance institutions, state-owned companies that were meant to anchor the state's involvement in economic development with developmental goals, completely hollowed out, used as ATMs for the Zuma crowd and the associates. And then on the other hand, you have a business community that for the longest time, Professor Turok, sat it out, literally just sat it out because there was no trust. And like you say, there was no clear economic way forward. How do you bring these disparate groups together, restore trust, and get them to agree on the minimum program?
Well, let's start with labor. It seems to me that COSATU made serious errors. COSATU were wounded by Zuma, and because there are many public sector unions which were given better wages and they were treated with kid gloves, they were treated as an aristocracy of labor. And so, in fact, what we have now is a kind of aristocracy of labor in a sea of huge unemployment and poverty. COSATU should never have jettisoned the unemployed and the poor. COSATU should have been a labor union which represented not only those who were organized, but also those who were not organized, in order to maintain unity of the working class. Then the present nonsense would not have happened. I mean, the split with Vavi and so on was really a function of maneuvering and manipulation and, frankly, a bit of corruption among union leaders.
Yes, not a bit, quite a bit. Professor Turok, we're going to take a short break. When we come back, I want to actually talk about that, because when we talk about the sins of incumbency, we tend to focus only on the African National Congress. My view is different. My view is that the sins of incumbency actually penetrated the entire alliance, and that is part of why we have the problems we have today.
702 Karima's on Twitter at Karima Brown.
It's just gone 22:10. I'm in conversation with the African National Congress's stalwart and former Member of Parliament, Professor Ben Turok, who wrote a really interesting and provocative article in the Business Day, calling it as it is, saying that we need to take stock of what went wrong and how to fix it and how to go forward. Professor Turok, before the break, you made the point about the fact that there was a little union corruption, which led me to make the point that when we look at the sins of incumbency, there's the tendency to look at the ANC, and of course, correctly so, the ANC is the governing party. But the ANC also rules with two allies, the South African Communist Party and the Congress of South African Trade Unions. And they too have been sucked up into this, economic policy confusion. I mean, there's all kinds of justifications for things that are just, in developmental terms, in working class terms, just doesn't make sense. To what extent should they too take responsibility for the lack of clear economic policy direction, and most importantly, that minimum program that you speak of that needs to be developed to get the South African economy moving?
Well, let's start with the Communist Party. You know, in the old days, when the Communist Party was small and underground and very influential, it was a very theoretical party. It was, the importance of theory was predominant.
Yes.
It was a party which had a very serious history and which had a very deep understanding of the political economy of South Africa and indeed of the world. There is no sign of that in the present Communist Party. The present Communist Party is opportunistic. It is sucked into the system. It is their ministers. And I mean, they are ministers who are very senior. and who never talk like communists.
Mm.
You know, you take the public works. You know, the level of corruption that has been revealed in the Department of Public Works, and it's led by a communist. In fact, by two communists.
Mm. But to be fair to them, they inherited a pretty corrupt department to begin with.
Well, but you know, he's been there for quite a long time.
Mm.
I mean, he's a nice guy. Both the minister and deputy minister are nice people, but they failed to provide leadership.
Mm.
All they've done is the EPWP program, which is good in itself. But you know, they never talk like communists.
Mm. No, on that I agree with you.
And Blade Nzimande, you see, is similarly. I mean, he's been captured by the ANC. He's now much more psychologically an ANC man than a communist.
You know, it's interesting what you say. I had a conversation with someone who was in the African National Congress and in the party over the weekend, and he made this point. He said, we are not communists of the ANC. We are communists in the ANC. And of course, exactly. It kind of captured exactly what you are saying, that there is no advancement of an actual left working class program that is contested as it should be, and as it always has been in the past, but an actual working class program that is put forward by the communists. So, you know, why should we be communists of the ANC? Why can't we be communists in the ANC?
Of course, and they've jettisoned the whole history of Marxism and class analysis. That has been jettisoned. You know, it's now people on the ultra left, if you like, I don't like the term, but if you like, people on the ultra left to talk about class.
Mm.
The Communist Party doesn't talk about the role of the working class. Kossatu does, but not the Communist Party.
Mm.
Not clearly. So the whole theoretical foundation in terms of political economy and historical analysis is lacking in this country. And this has led to the general erosion of understanding politically generally. But take Kossatu now.
Yeah.
Similarly, Kossatu claims that it is a socialist movement.
Mm.
Talk about social. It's very far from socialist in its articulation. Very far. And indeed, because most of the important unions, apart from NUMSA, which is not there, of course, but the important unions are public service unions.
Mm.
They themselves behave like almost an elite within the working class and have lost the sense of class solidarity with the unemployed, with the townships. You know, the African masses are poverty-stricken. And you would think that the leaders of Kossatu would pay at least as much attention to the poor as they do to those in jobs. But no. You know.
But so Professor Turok, is it not unfair to blame a worker who works to get to work, considering apartheid spatial planning, for the plight of someone who doesn't have work? I mean, the deputy president or the deputy minister of education, Phuthimana Mela, once made a profound point in a conversation I had with him. He said, Karima, there's work, but there isn't jobs. And of course, I mean, he's right. The point I'm making here is that what is it that we are going to settle for, given the fact that we've got such inequality and we have the history of colonialism? Our economic plan should be particularly nuanced. It should be particularly targeted. But what it does instead is that it empowered a black elite that has caused such divisions, even within the black community, in class terms. And then, of course, it has a white community that has given up very little. And then it has communities that are feeling completely neglected and outside of the dividend of democracy. And a business community that wants to basically just go on as usual.
Well, you've just described a typical colonial country where you have an elite and which to some extent has sponsored a labor force which is a bit privileged over the rest, and you have a huge mass which is living in poverty, living unemployed, and living on welfare.
Yeah.
This is the classical colonial system, and you have an elite, a rich white elite, which is self-sufficient and selfish and looking after its wealth, which is growing all the time. You know, I mean, I am shocked to see Professor Woolard has published a paper showing that the top 1% are getting richer every week.
Yes, yes.
Under the ANC government.
Mm-hmm.
We never fought for that. None of the old leaders of the ANC would accept that as an advance in democracy.
Mm-hmm.
It's retrogression. So, you know, there are very fundamental schisms in our society which require proper theoretical analysis.
Yes.
And that analysis is not being done.
Professor Turok, I couldn't agree with you more. As a final question to you, what is the basis for this minimum program? And more importantly, what is the organizational work that is required to bring people together to essentially look at the objective conditions as they really obtain?
Well, it seems to me the most, as far as I'm concerned, if you woke me up in the middle of the night and said to me, what is the priority?
Mm.
I would say the townships.
Mm.
It is an absolute disgrace that we are living with informal settlements, as they're called, which are tin shacks. If you go to Rwanda, one of the poorest countries in Africa, there are no corrugated iron houses.
Mm.
It's all brick.
Mm.
But in South Africa, it's corrugated iron houses everywhere. And it seems to me that a government of the ANC should not be allowing that to happen.
Mm.
So the priority, as far as I'm concerned, is that all the national resources that we can possibly muster should be put into rebuilding the townships and making life acceptable there. And that would create jobs. By the way, I have suggested to people in authority, that the 400 billion that President Ramaphosa is talking about, if that were dedicated to rebuilding the townships, you do a whole lot of things.
Mm.
One is you create a lot of jobs. Two, you use local material, South African material, not imported material.
Mm.
Therefore, you're saving foreign exchange.
Mm.
Three, you win the next election.
Mm.
You know, imagine a kind of New Deal program,
yes,
a kind of Roosevelt program, you know, in which the state and business and everybody agrees on one priority, namely to make the living conditions of the poor in the informal settlements, make that livable. Surely we can agree on that.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree with you more. Professor Turok, it's been a privilege and an honor to speak with you. Thank you very much for sharing your thoughts and for being as provocative. I think this is exactly the conversation that we should be having, and we will certainly continue on the Karima Brown Show exploring new ways of doing things, because I think we also need to accept, as you correctly point out, doing the same stuff over and over, hoping for a different outcome, is absolutely foolish. And more importantly, it's dangerous. It's dangerous for the future of our country. Thank you very much. That is African National Congress stalwart and former Member of Parliament, Professor Ben Turok.